Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called In Life and Work. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure having you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Steve Nobel. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Steve a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted into the PeopleYouShouldMeet site by you, our listeners. Now, Steve and I have known each other for probably 5 or 6 years now, and Steve actually entered my life when I was at a transition point, like I was moving away from a very structured and very linear way of working in the corporate world and really opening up to my intuitive talents and abilities. And Steve was someone who was absolutely instrumental in helping me make that transition from a working life that I didn't particularly enjoy into one that I absolutely love. Now, I know that Steve, having known him for so long, has had that effect on many, many people all around the world through his workshops and also his coaching as well. Steve is an author. He's written 2 books so far. He's written Freeing the Spirit and also The Prosperity Game, and is literally in the process of writing his 3rd book called Enlightened Work, which will be published very shortly. And it's the topic of our discussion tonight, so I'm very keen to explore this subject matter. It's a matter that's very close to my heart, and I'm very excited that my very good friend Steve Nobel is joining me to explore this topic together. So welcome, Steve.
Hey, Damien. Thanks for inviting me.
Great. So, Steve, I thought we'd just kick off at the very top. Like, enlightened work may not be a term that's familiar to a lot of people, and I was just wondering if you could just explain what exactly is enlightened work and why do you think it's important at this particular juncture in time?
Yeah. Well, for me, the title of the book, Enlightened Work, came in a dream. I was just interested in writing a book for a while, wasn't quite sure of the subject, but then I got told in this dream, this is the subject, just get cracking, and so I did. So from there I had to think, well, what is enlightened work? It's a great question, and what I came up with was, it's a moving away from what I would call meaningless work, and by meaningless I mean that beyond getting paid for it, it offers nothing much else. It may be for some people status, or the promise of some kind of promotion. Basically, it's money. There's no passion, there's no purpose, there's no aliveness in it, there's no growth in it, particularly. It feels probably a bit like a trap, climbing the corporate ladder, maybe finding it's parked against the wrong wall kind of thing. The opposite is what I call enlightened work, which for me is about a true sense of direction, one that starts setting you on fire. But when you start taking the steps, it's a bit like being in love, you know, I think. If you know, in this world, there are thousands of potential women you could date, but it's the one that sets you on fire, or the man you could date. That one, you go, I know because of the way I feel about this guy or this woman. Work is a bit like that. It's a bit like falling in love. And when you do it, you start to really become on purpose, on mission. Then you find yourself being in a kind of flow. I feel that an experience supported by the universe, where synchronicities happen, where people come in and out of your life to support you at the right time, to mentor you at the right time, to give you encouragement or to help coach you with your gifts. It's really a journey, and I don't see it's like it's a bit like the word enlightenment. There's no final thing. It's not like one day you wake up and you're enlightened or have your enlightened work. It's an ongoing process that can take your whole life and probably will, because you might find yourself at one stage where you're on fire with a particular area of work, and after a few years, it suddenly stops doing it for you, and you go, well, what else, or what do I need to adjust to start rekindling the fire? So it's an ongoing journey, ongoing process. There's no actual end result. I mean, you know, when you leave the planet, perhaps that's the end result, but I think actually enlightened work carries on for many lifetimes, I would say.
Mm. That's very interesting. Now, I was just wondering about your own personal journey to enlightened work, Steve. Were you actually born an enlightened worker, or did you have some kind of journey that you had to work through to arrive at a joyful place of working?
Yeah, I'm laughing because I definitely wasn't born into enlightened work, or family that had any conception of enlightened work. I was born in the late 50s, British working class family, industrial, kind of coming towards the end of the Industrial Revolution, perhaps starting to hit the kind of information age. My family had very traditional values around work and around a lot of other things as well. But I was growing up in the 60s, and all this kind of flower power, you know, new thinking, spirituality, love and peace and all the rest of it. And I must say I was totally confused by all of it because I couldn't quite work it all out. And I followed my parents' footsteps in going into, not exactly, because it wasn't exactly working class, but in a way I went into banking. And but I was filled probably with my family's values around security and stability, which is what they believed in. And I went into banking for 10 years, and I must say it was the most dreariest, boring time of my life. It was not just boring, but towards the end it was incredibly stressful because something in me was saying, this is not it. My head was going, but I've got a family to support, I've got a mortgage to keep going, you know. Now ex-wife was very hot about, she's Capricorn, you know, very hot about material stability. So I was in a real conflict around that. But finally, I had a breakdown there. I completely burnt out, hit the wall, really, went off work for a year, and then started to rethink my life and went into long-term therapy for 7 years. And I ended up going into local government, which was a very left-wing, London Borough of Lambeth, which was a very left-wing borough, inner-city borough, and I went into the most left-wing directorate of that, so it was a lot of ideology, a lot of politics, a lot of union issues, all that kind of stuff. You know, I was there when there were riots against the poll tax and all that kind of thing going on. So I stayed there for 10 years, and actually for me, I got more of a sense of myself. I got more of a sense of kind of what I could offer. I was very good with people, and it was a very good environment for people skills, so that was good for me. I actually progressed. I did a lot of management there, and I actually found that I was much more resourceful than I realized. But then after 10 years again, I'd been quite involved in spiritual pursuits by now, and personal development pursuits, so at this stage, my heart was just going, this is not it, again, and I recognized the signs. But again, you know, when this kind of things happens, usually your heart or your body goes, there's something else, or your gut goes, something else, but your head goes, no. I've just invested 10 years into this job, and I've already done this once, and I'm not doing it again, you know. This was my thinking, and I resisted like crazy, and the more I resisted, the harder it got for me, and I got all kinds of into all kinds of conflicts and stuff at work. And I realized the signs were there that I was fighting my calling, if you like. Then by this time I'd realized that the universe actually does answer our deepest prayers or deepest questions. So I asked the universe in meditation, should I resign? And I was walking down Acre Lane in Brixton, and I saw, this was a few days later, saw a T-shirt of a guy in front of me, and on the back it said, just do it. You know, the Nike brand thing. And I was my head said, you are not going to give up a career 10 years because of a T-shirt. That is absolutely crazy. And I walked on another minute or so, and I saw the same message again in the window, and then I resigned the next day. And it was blissful for me. But again, I was on this in the space of, I don't know what I'm going to do. I had no job. You know, I had family to support and a flat, you know, and all kinds of things. So I had a whole journey, and it took me a couple of years of doing a whole load of stuff till I find myself working at Alternatives, which is a personal development organization, spiritual development organization based in St. James's Church. And I started working there, and I worked myself up. Within a year or so, I became a director. I've been a director for 10 years. So that really for me was a third career, and that was much more middle of the road. It wasn't so conservative right-wing or left-wing ideological. It was middle. It was balanced. It was like, as the Buddha said, find the middle way. And I think with Alternatives, I did. So I've been there for 10 years. And after 10 years, part of me says, this is fantastic, but it's not enough. And so a couple of years ago, I started getting a calling to write. I created a coaching business. I've been doing for a few years trainings around Britain and Europe. And I'm writing another book here. So it's not now that I have to ditch my third career, but I'm actually creating my fourth as we speak.
Now, Steve, you mentioned something very interesting there, like the whole idea around fighting the calling. Now, is that something that's typical for people? Do most people fight their calling, or once they actually uncover it, they embrace it fully from the start?
Yeah, I think calling is it's kind of a spiritual term, calling, and it's almost like a call and response. What happens with a calling is a part of us yearns for something more. It could be that we ask a question or we make a step. There must be something more to life than this. It may not be a totally conscious question or a conscious statement, but once we start putting that out, you know, is this what it is? Isn't there nothing more for me? Is my life just going to be about paper shuffling or whatever the feeling is? The universe actually starts to give a response to that and sends you messengers or signs and omens that says, actually, you're right, there is more, and this is the way. But then the head comes in and goes, I was very typical, I imagine, from coaching a lot of people. I think a lot of people have this reaction. They see these callings and they distrust them because we're not taught to understand intuition or callings. We're taught to believe in a rational, mechanistic universe. So as soon as these things come along, whether it's rainbows in the sky or T-shirts with you can do it, or somebody gives you a tarot reading, or you go and see a palmist and he tells you you're destined for this and not what you're doing now, whatever it is, it can come in a thousand ways. We will resist it. It's normal. So if anybody's listening to this call and thinks, I've been getting a few signs about moving on and I'm resisting it, is that normal? Absolutely it is. We resist it in a number of ways, and each one of us will resist it in our own unique way. Some of us become overly rational. Some of us go into guilt, thinking, oh, I can't possibly do this. My family would suffer. Some go into control. They start micromanaging everything. Some people go into fighting, which is what I did. I started creating conflicts around me. It seems like the conflict's happening to us, but actually we're generating it to keep ourselves distracted from the calling. Callings could happen from reading a book, from seeing a film. When I really started to awaken, I went to see a film called Dances with Wolves, and something in that film just hit me in my heart, and I cried through most of the film. It was a part of the calling. That was a few years later. I started getting very interested in shamanism, but part of me knew in advance that that's where I was going to be heading. So there are all kinds of ways the universe can reach us, and it's almost like a part of us in the future is speaking back to us, saying this is the way, and it just tries to speak to us through dreams, through metaphor, through chance encounter.
Excellent. Now, Steve, you mentioned resistance, and I know I certainly experienced it when I was making that transition. And I was just wondering, like, you've guided many people through actually breaking down the resistance that holds them back from really stepping into what they're here to do. And I was just wondering if you could share a couple of pointers for people who may be experiencing resistance at some level towards stepping into their calling.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, I mean, the first thing to realize is that, you know, resistance is normal. To find the way that your primary resistance, so underneath every single resistance is a form of fear, and fear is going to be felt as a contraction in the body, a contraction in the mind. It could manifest as doubt. It can manifest as I said, a number of ways. So once you realize, well, actually what happens for me is when I am resisting something, I go into confusion, and when I get confused, I stop in my tracks. I don't want to do anything else. Finding your unique resistance is a great way of then going, well, what would I love to happen instead of this resistance? So for me, confusion is a great way of stopping me in my tracks. If I get confused, I don't want to move forward. I start backpedaling. So what would I love instead would be, well, actually, clarity. I'd like to see where I'm going. So then I've got to find ways of actually, or if I was coaching somebody around this, I would actually coach them into, well, tell me what clarity looks like to you. When was the time you had clarity? And I'd start to really draw out in a person, or you can do it for yourself, or you can find a friend who can do it for you, what it is you want instead of that resistance. What is it, where is it you really want to go? remembering that fear is the basic resistance we all face. How do we deal with fear? And a great way of looking at fear is there's two types of fear, really. One is completely useless, and that form of fear is what you might call mental masturbation, where you probably know people like this, where you just sit opposite them and they tell you every possible fear that could happen or everything that could go wrong that hasn't gone wrong yet. And that's a kind of form of mental masturbation where you're just imagining all the worst things that could happen but never have happened. The second kind of fear is where you're actually in a situation where something is about to happen to you, where you have to take an action to get out of the way. So if a car's hurtling towards you in the street and you look and you get a reaction, and fear is meant to propel you out of that situation. Or if you're on a street and somebody's approaching you, they look a bit dodgy, you might get a bit scared. Fear is meant to propel you away from that person. And this is where fear is very useful. So it's not about getting rid of fear, but it's just separating out, is this a fear that's useful to me now? Is it helping me in some way, the flight or fight thing? Or is it just, am I imagining all the worst case scenarios and then throwing up a kind of game or protection to stop that happening, you know? I think, you know, getting to the underlying fear is really good, because mostly they're all made up in our heads. And when I'm sitting opposite somebody, realizes that, the usual reaction is they start to laugh, really, you know. Mm. I had somebody yesterday, and there was a fear around intimacy, it was related to work and money, but it was a kind of strange one, intimacy. And they really started, when we touched upon it, really backing away, and you could see them really closing down, and just stayed with it and just noticed the response, and they noticed the response as well. And then after a while, we talked about, well, what is intimacy? What is safety? What is it for you to be safe and to be intimate? And she started to laugh. She said, it's crazy, isn't it? I made all this stuff up in my head. And I said, well, absolutely. So if we make stuff up in our heads, worst case scenarios, of course we can make up other stuff, which is why visualization and affirmations are so useful.
Mm. Absolutely.
I hope that's practical enough. I was a bit too airy-fairy.
No, that's awesome. Really, really cool.
Great. Okay.
Now, another thing I was thinking, in terms of first steps, lots of people have the desire to step into something new, but they don't know what's the actual first step to take. And I was just wondering if you could share some insights on how people might be able to take a first step and what that step might be.
Yeah. Well, let's imagine you're in something you really don't like very much. One of the difficulties with meaningless work is the tendency of it is to start taking your life over and sucking the life force out of you. So actually, you find all the hours, you know, you'd rather be doing something else, but you're doing at work, you come home, you're tired, you've got no energy, you want to go to sleep, or you want to just distract yourself, you go on a TV or computer game. So you get into a vicious cycle of, you know, doing stuff that you can't bear, and then sort of coming home, putting on the TV, having a drink, just to kind of avoid all the kind of the feelings you have about it. So one way is to start breaking that cycle, which is when you do come home, sure, it's fine to rest, but start taking quiet time, I would suggest. Time out, you know, even at the weekends or when you're not working. Go in nature, find some stillness and silence, and start coming back to yourself and getting a real connection to who you are and what you feel and what you think. Because another thing actually that does block us is the opinions of others. So you may have a lot of people around you that have opinions about what you should be doing with your life. In a way, it might be a good idea just to step away from that, take time out, and what do you feel? You know, what is it you really feel? What is it you really want out of life? And so stillness and reflection is a great place to start. Get some of your energy back. So don't let all the life force be sucked into your work. When you have a bit more of energy, and you could do things like sports or yoga, all these things are wonderful ways of also enhancing your energy, or Tai Chi. Then you need to spend time actually on dreaming or visualizing or writing down some goals, getting an idea of what would you love to be doing. Now, initially, it might be too big a jump to say, well, I'm working as an office clerk and I want to become an airline pilot. But what you can do is go, is say, looking at every other area of life, what would I love to do in my life, you know, that is easy for me to achieve? You know, would I like to go on holiday for a week? Start setting some goals around other areas of your life that's easy for you to do, and start taking small steps to move towards it. In terms of your work, it's very good to brainstorm all the things that you're good at, all the skills that you have acquired, and all the things that you'd really love to try out at work. You know, in terms of dreaming, there's a lot of stuff been talked about this in The Secret, The Law of Attraction, but the more you can really dream, the more the universe can start adjusting your life, your reality, to start moving you towards that. Now, I've been interested in this for about 17 years, and in 17 years, every year I do what is called a circle of dreams, where I just spend time writing out in a circle everything that I would love to create in my life, from relationships to work to travel to creativity. And over the last 17 years, probably about 85% of everything I've wanted has actually manifested and come about. I didn't have to work out how it was going to happen. I just needed to know, this is what I really want. Because once you really know, something in you ignites, and you will find a way to creating it. You know, you have to trust that kind of that power within you to create it. Somebody very close to me recently had a child, and they're not actually in a very good financial position. But my partner said to me something which really touched me. She said, babies come with their own fortune. And it's that idea that we're born with this kind of life force that can actually create our life, create our destiny, create our reality. Even if you don't believe it, you've got to start trying out in small ways. I certainly, when I was working in banking and then local government, couldn't quite envisage what I was going to be doing with my life. I needed a couple of years out to really get stock of what was possible. You know, what is possible for me? And I, it was a continual shedding of beliefs and stepping up. Well, if I can do this, then I can do that. And if I can write that book or that article, then I can do that. And it's just been sort of upping the ante ongoingly. And really, you know, my journey hasn't been one of the silver spoon in the mouth. It's been one of block and limitation and completely off course and not knowing what I'm doing, utterly stressed, burnt out, hitting the wall, you know, depressed for a year. So I am speaking from a place of, if I can do it, as we say in NLP, if one person can do something, anyone can do it. So wherever you are in your life, it is possible to move away from what you're doing now to something you'd rather be doing, or rather, you know, in terms of work or whatever.
Mm. That's very, very powerful. Mm. Steve, you touched on an important thing just in that response. You mentioned the opinions of others. Now, I know for lots of people, that can be a really tricky bridge to cross over, whether it's opinions of parents, whether it's opinions of like a loved one or children. Do you have any ways of actually navigating the opinions of others when you're actually stepping out onto a new path as well?
Yeah. Okay. There was a spiritual teacher I met many years ago who said something to me that really struck me. He said, it's very hard for somebody who's Jewish to actually become enlightened or awakened unless they move away from their culture for a while. And I thought that was a very strange thing to say, but what he was really saying to me was that it's not necessarily Jewish, but any culture or any family or any society that's very tight, has very strong belief systems that encourage all the members to really adhere to, which, you know, I've been out with a Jewish woman, and I experienced very strong binding force there. My ex-wife was Catholic. Again, very strong binding force. Everyone, you adhere to this kind of belief system. There's no real questioning as such from outside the box. You just accept it or else. And there are families like that where somebody I know, a young woman I know, whose parents are very successful and very domineering. And they basically chose her life, her career, and her path for her. And she bitterly resented it but felt powerless to do anything about it. And the only way she could really escape was actually to leave country and do a lot of kind of processing and coaching and personal development courses and get some sort of insight into what was going on. And I remember actually her telling me that one Christmas she confronted her mother on this, that she felt brainwashed by her family's demands and beliefs. And there was a big scene, crying. It was an Italian family. Kind of crying scene, big upset. And then, of course, everyone was loving each other again. But she felt that somehow she'd healed something and separated. So if you are surrounded with people with very strong opinions, don't try and change their minds, because you never will. You need to move away. And I guess, you, Damon, you probably relate to this, having lived in Australia with a very strong... Australia's got some very strong cultural beliefs. You may have felt you had to move away to get some insight into, you know, who am I beyond that? And I think for a lot of us, to get out away from our families for a while, it's not abandon them, but get away from our culture for a while, it gives you a broader vision of yourself. You know, that's why travel is such a wonderful thing. It opens you up to who you are and what's possible. And a lot of families, one of the real challenges in families is that, especially if you have parents who really didn't do what they wanted to do, didn't follow their dreams, didn't activate their inner resources, and didn't really know what they were capable of, if they get these young kids, these gorgeous young souls coming in, they will not be able to recognize it in them. That's the tough thing, really. My parents were really quite shut down. They were not doing what they wanted to do. They were doing it out of duty. So when they saw me, they were going, you know, no way, I can't see, you know, just get a proper job. And so I was looking for a proper job for years. And when I found myself at alternatives, I thought, oh, my God, I'm not in a proper job anymore. They would really be unhappy. But we have to separate out from that old conditioning, which is incredibly strong. You know, you have to step away from it to realize how strong some of this old stuff is, because some of it is not just your parents. It goes back to your grandparents and great-grandparents. There's a whole tradition in your family of what men do, what women do. And if you step away from that, you're going to experience a lot of stuff inside that goes, what are you doing? Are you crazy? You're getting on the inside and the outside, and that's normal. So you need courage, really, I'd say. Courage and faith in your journey and faith in yourself, because no journey is easy. Everyone has got challenges, and they're sent there for a reason. One of the things that I believe, and you don't have to believe in this, but that soul chooses the circumstances of your birth for two reasons. One is it sets you up in a family that's going to totally see, adore, and encourage your gifts. Now, this is rare, but it can happen. Mozart was such a case. A friend of mine, a young man who's a brilliant actor and musician, was born into a family of singers and actors that go back generations. That kid is flourishing and excelling at a speed of knots, you know. There are other people that are born into families where they're not seen for their gifts, they're not encouraged, the families are shut down, or have got very strong views about what they should be doing with their life. This is the other way the soul helps us grow, by putting us into situations which block us in our life's mission. This is a riskier path, but there are many people like Handel, for example, the great composer Handel. His father was a lawyer and said to Handel's young kid, look, stop mucking around with those musical instruments. You're going to have a proper job. You're going to be a lawyer like me. And Handel had to basically, when everyone was asleep in the house, go into a room far away in the house and actually practice on musical instruments. So he actually found a way of getting around his father's strong, block to him doing his path. And in my family blocked, you know, my path, I would say, in which is a great gift. They had zero acceptance or very little tolerance of spirituality. My partner Ursula, her parents are atheist, scientific. They've got zero acceptance, really, of spirituality. So both of us have experienced being blocked. But that blocking has acted like if they say I can't do it, I'm going to do it then. It's that kind of motivation force that can actually be quite a powerful force to make us move forward. So I don't know if that answers your question there, Dave.
Yeah, that's an excellent answer, Steve. Great. Now, I mentioned, Steve, that we've had questions come in from all around the world, and I just thought I'd kick you off with a question from Sandy, who was in the United States. And Sandy asks, I've been trying to figure out what my gifts and talents are and what I can do to provide a quality service to others that will also provide me with a steady income stream. I've not been able to come up with anything. Do you have any suggestions on how to proceed?
Yeah, well, I would say that very often we don't totally know what our gifts are and talents are. We often take them for granted, especially if they're not been seen in our family. They actually become invisible to us. So, for example, when I was very young, I loved writing. You know, I loved reading, writing. I remember as a kind of seven-year-old just spending a lot of my dinner breaks, you know, and all the kids were out kicking footballs, writing stories. Now, I did it. I was passionate about it. I remember this fire inside of me doing this stuff. But that passion was not met with any kind of, that's amazing. And so after a while, that passion went away, and it took me many years, actually, to recover that passion. I just thought, writing, well, I can't. I even went to, like, writing classes. I couldn't even do it. I couldn't even activate that gift in me. It was so shut down. It took a few kicks from the universe to get it kick-started again. So I would say that you might be aware, Sandy, of some of your gifts, but probably your real gifts and talents then you haven't really put a finger on. There might be things you just take for granted, or there might be things you just don't know are there. So what to do with that is you need to play a sort of guessing game. I sort of guessed at a certain point that, well, you know, creativity seems really important to me. I've got a feel that that's an area I could have some talent in, but I haven't got a clue what it is. So then I went on an exploration of trying stained glass classes. I went to jewelry making classes. I did a load of stuff, and then it just, none of it worked. I did a few years of this. I thought, oh, well, it's not quite, I'm enjoying it, it's not quite. And then suddenly, I can't remember how I came across it, I just started writing, and something in me exploded. But I was looking in a general direction, and then I found it. So what kind of things are important to you? They are clues. You know, there might be people in the world that you admire that are doing something. You go, that is just phenomenal. I can't do it, but they're phenomenal. They're clues to what your gifts are, because there's a saying, if you've got it, if you spot it, you've got it. You know, there are plenty of people who are shadow artists who love watching, going to art galleries and seeing paintings, but they will not paint because they don't think that they've got anything to offer. I remember coaching a young woman, and we were talking about work, I think, and I just said to her, look, okay, tell me, what would you love to do if you could do anything? Forget money, forget work. What would you love to do? She stopped in her tracks, and she almost burst into tears, and she said, I just want to paint.
Wow.
You know? And that was a moment where it set her off. Not that she was to become a painter, but that was a stepping stone on her finding another gift, you know, and there was somebody else who said to me, I just want to cook. And I went, fine, just do it. You know, there another person who said to me, I just want to be a healer. But the sign of it is this kind of tremendous emotion with it. I don't know if it's possible for me, but I'd love to try it. And so I suggest that with gifts, especially if they're hidden, you just have to get out there, you have to try around, you have to look in the world and see what signs are there, what things do you look at people and go, they're amazing. Because when I was younger, I loved authors. I just looked at people like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Rudyard Kipling. I thought, these people are just so talented in their... And Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings, I read it 14 times. I thought, how does this guy have the imagination to write that? I couldn't conceive of it. And I thought, they're just so amazing. But me, no way. So that's another clue. Look for what is amazing in the outside world. They're clues for you. It is tough if you haven't been seen in the family, but the gifts are definitely there. Everyone, when I sit opposite coaching clients, I realize everyone is talented. It's just that we don't all realize it.
Cool. Great question, Sandy, and excellent answer, Steve. Now, this one comes from Victoria, who's in the UK, and Victoria asks, how do I move out of a soulless profession that gives me no joy, PR, into something that will fulfill me, such as working outdoors, when I have no qualifications or training in these areas and no savings, feeling stuck?
That's a great question, really. Well, that was the very question I asked myself. How do I move out of a soulless profession that gives me no joy? It's funny, though, because she says PR, I think, is what gives her no joy. I met somebody the other day that just said, you know what, PR sets me on fire. And she's just been doing it for 17 years, very successful, but, you know, different strokes for different folks. I had no qualification to become a director of alternatives. I had no training particularly. in business or anything like that, but somehow I was there. I used to attend courses where, you know, about work and life purpose, and I heard that, look, qualifications are not important. It's purpose and passion's important. And I thought, I don't believe that for one minute. For me, qualifications was everything. And people were getting ahead of me because they had more qualifications. When I was doing therapy for several years, everyone in my therapy group had either an MA or a PhD. I couldn't believe it. Every single one of them. I was the only one that hadn't gone to university. And it galled me for years. And I used to moan about it and complain about it. And they used to say to me, look, getting an MA or PhD is not important. It doesn't make you happier. And I went, that's easy for you to say. I couldn't go. I didn't have that opportunity. You did, and maybe you're screwing it up, but I want what you've got, and I can't have it. Mm. But now I realize that we're just qualifications, that actually, if I had have gone, I mean, qualifications are great, and not that I'm dissing them, but one of the things about studying too long is that you're actually just taking information that other people think and structure, and it actually it can stop you actually thinking and structuring your own material and what you believe. So actually what I've done is I've made life my university, and I ongoing, because for me growth and learning is so important. So, you know, it may be, Victoria, that because you mentioned qualifications, it may be actually that growth, that learning is important for you, but you just couldn't bear the system. So what you might need to do is find a way of actually getting some training in things that you do love, because if you're doing it in an area that you love, you'll find that it's so much easier than if you're trying just to do it because I need to get on and get some money. Now, a young guy I did coach, he dropped out of school at 17, had a few O-levels, GCSEs. He kept trying to go back and take, he just kept failing, and he came to me, his mother, and said, look, this young man's fake, would you help him? So I just said, look, you know, what are you doing? And he said, I've got to get some qualifications, I've got to make it work. And he was obviously not someone who had that kind of intelligence. And there's lots of studies about different types of intelligences. This was a guy I found out that his way of learning was by doing things, and that's not often what you get at school. So what we had to point him towards was a kind of training where he learned physically by touching things, picking things up, like an apprenticeship kind of thing or trade. That was brilliant for him. He was looking in the wrong direction. So once he did that, he flew anything of a training nature that involved more kinesthetic way of learning. He flew through it. And most of the schools don't really, maybe more now, but certainly in my day, they didn't appreciate different learning styles. So I think, Victoria, that I'm not quite sure what it is you want to do, but certainly if you're passionate about something, you can start reading it and you'll find a way of doing it. There was a young woman in Bulgaria that I met who was a corporate trainer, lots of money, but her passion was for a Damien, you'll know this, human design system. It's a kind of profiling system that involves astrology and energy, and most of the family were against it. But she didn't have the money to do it, even though, you know, Bulgaria, you don't get paid so well over there, and the training was from Britain or America, so it was much more expensive for them. She didn't have the money, but her passion was so strong, I knew she would find a way, and I just sat with her and said, look, it's not obvious how you're going to do it now, but you will do it, won't you? And she said, yes, I will find a way. I spoke to her this morning, and she's on the advanced training course already. I don't know how she got the money. I didn't ask her, but she found a way. Another young woman in Bulgaria that I met, a very good friend, wanted to become a color, one of these color therapists where they dress you, you know, in your colors that fit your skin and your personality. And it cost way beyond what she could afford. But she was so passionate about it. And I said to her, I don't know how you're going to do it, but you are going to do it, aren't you? And she said, yes. She's trained now and earning money doing it. So qualifications and money, they may seem to stop you. They sound like very good reasons. But actually what really stops a person is not these things. It's their thinking about qualifications or money that really stops them. So if you can change your thinking, and if it is something you're really burning about, you will find a way. Nothing on earth will stop you.
Awesome answer.
Motivation. She may be looking in the wrong area.
Yeah. Cool. And good luck, Victoria, with
your
journey ahead.
Okay, this one comes from Susie, who's in Australia. Hello to all my Australian listeners. And Susie asks, I have slipped back into old beliefs and patterns of thinking around work that are full of fear. I have not worked for nearly 2 years. I now need to earn money as soon as possible, and there are some very real practical obstacles, as well as emotional, psychological ones. Now is my real opportunity to transform the way in which I earn money. I have the chance to do it authentically. But I feel passionless and unmotivated about it. I really don't know what to do.
Right, wow, there's a big one, eh? Well, I would guess, Susie, if you're listening, that these old beliefs and patterns around work, where you feel afraid, you've only got to look at your parents, and if you can imagine that they're in front of you, and you can imagine your mother there, and you say to her, Mother, tell me what you think about work and money, and if you listen to what, in your mind's eye, she says to you, there'll be a good clue about what's affecting you in this area, stuff that you probably accepted and believe from your mother, and then do the same for your father, because parents will communicate conditioning and messages. They don't have to tell you, they don't come home from work looking really tired and grumpy, and they don't have to sit you down and go, look, darling, I just got to tell you that work sucks, work's terrible. They don't do that. They come home and you look at how they are, how they're acting, how they're being in themselves, and you go, my gosh, he's just come back from work. It doesn't take a genius to work out. He can't stand it, you know. And if you see your mother and father day in, day out doing this, that should be ingrained in you. But you've got to realize that whatever happened to your parents doesn't have to be your destiny. Now, that sounds easy enough, doesn't it? But one of the things in families is we have a tremendous loyalty to our family. Even if our family are dysfunctional, we'll still feel loyal to them. So, for example, if a parent is alcoholic, we'll do everything we can to either hide it or help them or keep trying to change them, you know, because we love them. And actually we get into a pattern of kind of codependency with them. So I would say that, firstly, look at the messages from your family, Susie. See what messages they've given you that is fearful, that work is this way or it's that way, or maybe from your culture also. We get beliefs from our culture. The culture, or particularly the area where you've lived in, will give you certain messages. You need to see that those messages are not reality itself. The thing about beliefs is that we take an idea and we think this is reality. You know, work is hard. Work must be boring. Work must suck my life force energy. Work must take all my time. All these kind of ideas. We think one of the difficulties for a lot of people is they can't separate their ideas about reality from reality itself. Once you can, you know, a great way of doing it, you know, what I did, because I had some terrible conditioning around work. My father came home from work. I saw him every day for, you know, I was growing up as a teenager, and I looked at him and I thought, this guy is drained, he's unhappy, he's irritable. What is he doing that's making him that way? You know, I got that message. And when I left school, I thought, this is scary, because I don't know much about work, but what I've seen from my father is it's not a great thing to have to go to. Mm. And I created that pattern for myself. So you've got to see that actually not everyone experiences this way of working. They, you know, people with very good conditioning can create very good self-fulfilling prophecies. So I knew a young woman who came from a very wealthy family, and she decided to create a business. She was an acupuncturist. And the strange thing about her was she could move into an area where there's dozens and dozens of acupuncturists, lots of competition, and always she'd be the one that comes out top. She'd always be the one with the most clients. She never had any trouble making money. So the way we think does become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, Susie, it's a shame that you're not here, because I would say to you, well, you know, there's probably one core belief that's holding you back. What is it? So if you are listening, this is for you, Susie. What is the one core belief that's holding you back that you're so afraid of? You know, get that thought, write it down, and look at it. Now, that thought, you've spent years gathering evidence for that thought. You know, you've looked around, looking everywhere to see where that thought is true. Now, the way to undo it is, you need a couple of weeks for this one, is to write down what would I love to happen instead of this thought? You know, so if work is a bullying, violent environment, what would you love to be a truer reality? Write that down, and then the next 3 weeks, you have to start looking for evidence that supports that new idea. Because their studies have shown, or it's known in NLP, that the more you gather evidence for an idea, suddenly, when you've got enough evidence, you go, this must be true, and then reality starts to fit that truth. You need to start looking at another thought, gathering evidence for a new thought, and then suddenly you'll notice that a new reality is there. For example, if you're looking for red cars, and you're looking in the street, you're looking around, how many red cars around are there? You won't see how many yellow ones or blue ones or, you know, purple ones. Your perception filters out all that information. The moment you change your thinking, your perception will show you new data. So it is around, it's a bit of work really for you. Identify the old belief, that's the core of it. Find a new thought that's better. Start gathering evidence. And then the next step is start taking very small steps on the new thought. Like if you believe that work is a bullying environment and the new thought is work could be supportive, you look for evidence of supportive, you know, that there is support around you, then you need to take a little bit of steps, a small step that feels not too bad, not too much of a leap, that can start building up your confidence in this area. So you actually get to a point where you go, you know what, work is supportive, what am I talking about? If that makes sense. It's a bit of work, really, because the more, when you have a thought and you start putting it into action over a number of years, it becomes ingrained in your kind of neurons and your nervous system, and then reality and you become one. You can't separate out what you think and what you're experiencing. You need to start changing the thought, and then after, it takes about 33 days, actually, for your neurons in the brain to start rewiring into a different possibility, and then really you will literally see a different world and experience one. Mm-hmm.
Great. Excellent answer, Stephen. Good luck, Susie, with that process. Now, this question actually comes from Charo in Spain. And Charo asks, when you are interested in many subjects or in a big field such as personal development, how do you choose your particular area of interest to build a business around? How do you find the problem you are most suited to solve for your clients? Thanks in advance, Charo.
Sure, very good question. Well, that you know, I'm interested in many subjects. It's actually an issue that a lot of creative people have. They're interested in many, many things, and it's very hard for them to choose one. They need to be pinned down and go, what is the one thing, you know, if I were to hold a gun to your head, what would be the one thing? I'm not going to hold a gun to your head now, but in personal development, let's say I'm going to assume that you've gone into personal development because you had a challenge that you wanted to overcome and to transform, because very few people go into personal development seminars because they just love personal development seminars. They just don't do it. You know, there's always a reason. They always feel it's because I don't have the confidence, or I'm stuck in relationships, or my work sucks, or I can't make money. There's always a very good reason why we go in the first place. And so, Charo, I think that you've probably entered in it because you wanted to transform something in yourself that you possibly have done successfully to some point. If you have done it successfully, then you need to turn around and go, where does this problem reside in the marketplace? How can I help people with a similar problem to move forward? Even in the coaching business, you don't need to be an expert in any field. You just need to be one or two steps ahead of your market, because they're the idea, you're ideally placed then to help those people. If some of the worst teachers, for example, I've done fencing, I'm a fencing coach, and my fencing teacher, who's been doing it for years, you know, from the age of 14, said the worst teachers are Olympic champions, because they're so advanced that they can't teach people, you know. Mm. And so you don't have to be the expert. You just need to be a few steps ahead so that you can turn around and go, I can help you with raw food dieting. I can help you with relationships. I can help you. So for me, it's I struggled with this one for a while, because who can I help? So I tend to sort of work in a kind of magical flow way, helping people in issues of flow with it, like when they feel stuck. You know, I was totally stuck in my life. I can help other people unstuck and stick themselves. So what have you done in yourself that you can turn around and say, I can help you? That's a good clue. There are a few coaches who try and help people in issues that they haven't resolved themselves, and those coaches do not do well, really. No matter how hard they do or how much PR or marketing they do, you need to have walked the journey. The other thing you could do is look at the market and just say, well, what is the need in the market? What are the issues people need to solve for themselves, and list them all out. And if you look at that list of, say, 12 different areas, you can look at, well, which is the one that I feel most passionate to resolve or most skilled to resolve, and go from there. And you could look at the marketplace and say, well, okay, are other people doing it? Well, if so, how do I make myself more unique? How do I stand out more in the marketplace? How do I develop a story about what I'm doing so people are attracted? Because nowadays, story and brands are very important. You could have a chat with somebody who knows about branding, or on my website, I've interviewed people on branding, or Damien probably has too. So there's probably lots of free resources around branding. And branding is this issue. You know, what skills do you have? What's the need in the marketplace? How do you create a story or a look or a feel that says you're the one? So you're probably looking at a kind of a branding issue, Charles, I would say.
Cool. Great answer, Steve. Now, we're coming to the end of our hour. It's gone. It's absolutely flown past. And always thoroughly engaging having you on the program, Steve. Now, I know people listening at home, I'm sure they've been really thoroughly engaged through this whole process as well, and I am sure that they want to find more about your work, and particularly your coaching and your seminar work and your upcoming book as well. But I was just wondering if you could actually share some details on how people can get in touch and what services you offer.
Well, thanks, Emmett. Well, on my website, which is stevenobel.com, which is spelled N-O-B-E-S-T-E-V-E-N-O-B-E-L.com. On there you can find how to contact me. There's a workshop coming up in London, Covent Garden, on the 28th of March called Create Your Year 2010. And it will include elements of what I'm talking about today, about dreaming, about visioning, about prioritizing goals, about finding your path of least resistance. So if you're interested, there are some places. The group's limited to 25 people, so go on the website. You can book online if you want to. And there's also a section there for coaching, which I'm doing. So if you're interested in anything around your career or around life in general, or I do also branding coaching, personal branding coaching for small businesses or individuals, you can find what I'm up to on my website.
Right, and I've certainly had the great pleasure of having many of your coaching sessions over the years, Steve, and I can thoroughly endorse people actually stepping forward and booking a session, particularly around the area of gaining clarity of gifts and talents. You have a really magical way of drawing out the best in people, and I'd certainly recommend people get in touch with you and take you up on that service.
Thanks, Damien. Thank you.
Excellent. Now, Steve, we're sort of bringing the call to a close. And I was just wondering if you had any final words of advice for people who are sitting at home, maybe contemplating the engaging, love-filled career ahead of them. And I was just wondering if you had any final words of advice for people at home.
Yeah, I think certainly try and develop a way of thinking that's you know, a lot of people have been trained into problem thinking, knowing all the problems, looking, you know, where's the problem here? How do I solve that? Really, an important thing is to look at possibility thinking. So every day, spend some time going, okay, I'm going to suspend my critical, judgmental thinking. I'm just going to focus on what would I love to do today? What would I love to do this week? What would I love to happen in my work? What would I love to happen in my relationship? What would I love to happen? So using the word I would love to is a great way. It sort of suspends a critical mind because you can spot, yeah, but I don't want that because, yeah, and you go, okay, what would I love to do instead? So it's a great thing to develop, what would I love to do? You could find a way of discovering your gifts. Now, it might mean that joining a little support group where you actually sit around and you start brainstorming with each other about what am I good at, what have I done in the past that I'm good at, what am I drawn to, what challenges have I overcome. Little support groups are excellent. I was in a support group for 5 years, a very magical one, actually, in Hampstead, which met about 50 people met each week. It was a brilliant, it was a great resource. There are fantastic resources around. Alternatives has a coaching circle. That's one resource that is not too expensive, but they're around. You can find, you know, getting support is very important. Maybe look out in the world for people who are doing things that you feel inspired about. Find three people that you think that person is just so inspirational to me. Now, for example, I hear every week speakers at Alternatives, and every week I get inspired by, God, that is just not just the content but the delivery. I learned, that was just such a wonderful way of doing it. So that's all flowed into me. So when I speak, I've got like 10 years of watching people doing exactly that. So if you're passionate about something, you could be passionate about writing poetry, go and find poetry. Go and find people who are doing it. Get in their minds, like find a biography of Benjamin Zephaniah. Find out how they're doing it, how they're thinking. And let me think, if there's anything else I would advise you to do, is take action. Even if you don't know what the action is, go and attend a workshop where you can actually get a different perspective on your life. For me, when I was the most confused, I went and did some fantastic personal development workshops. There's some great ones around. If you're in London, there's a fantastic one called Essence Seminar, which if anybody emails me about, I can tell you about. There are others that are fantastic. It just gives you a completely different look on your life. So I hope there's probably more, but there you go for starters.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Steve. It's been amazing to have you back on the program. I've taken away some great nuggets this evening, and I'm sure people at home have as well. Yeah, also wanted to just take the opportunity to thank everyone at home. The questions that came in this week were again, like it's week to week, I'm always inspired by the thought that goes into the questions each week, and it certainly does really create a great atmosphere for an excellent call, and it provokes me, it provokes the guests they have on the show each week. So just wanted to thank you and let you know that you're appreciated. And even if we didn't specifically answer your question, hopefully through the course of the discussion, you would have gathered insights to help you on your journey. Now, for those of you who would like to listen to this recording again, we will be making it available for free on the People You Should Meet website first thing tomorrow morning. Also, there will be people on the call who will no doubt that these words would, I'd know that they'd inspire a friend, a family member, a work colleague. So by all means, do take that step forward and share this material liberally. Like, it's amazing how these little steps that we take can actually change the lives of others around us and also our own. So I do encourage you all to take that action step if you feel moved to. Yeah, so that's it, I think, for this week. So thanks once again, Steve, and thank you, everyone at home.
Thanks, Dara.
Take care.